Your Steve Jones Show podcast audio is loading. Steve Jones Show podcast sponsored by Kratzer Insurance Agency, Mount Pleasant Mills in Northumberland, and online at KratzerInsurance.com.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Good Tuesday, everybody. Great to have you with us here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Fun show coming up for you. We'll talk about it in just a few moments. Today's show brought to you by Kratzer Insurance, Mount Pleasant Mills and Northumberland. Auto, home, life, business insurance. If service or price means something to you, it means everything to them. It's Kratzer Insurance, Mount Pleasant Mills and Northumberland. I'm in the Sunbury Motors Studio, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. All right, coming up on today's show, should be fun. In a few moments, we'll check in with Ben Jones, StateCollege.com. Next half hour, Brandon Gouten, BleedingGreenNation.com, to talk about the Eagles. They have their big Thanksgiving Day showdown coming up with the Dallas Cowboys. We'll also talk with Jeff Hartman from BehindTheSteelCurtain.com. He'll join us at 4:06 today as we get you ready for the Steelers and the New Orleans Saints. Saints beaten last night by the Baltimore Ravens, 34-27. So now it's a question of the Steelers trying to keep pace with the Ravens in the division as well as Cincinnati. And, of course, the Steelers still have two games remaining with the Bengals at this stage. A lot going on today. I know Kevin's going to refer to it here in a few moments as Steve Jones Tuesday. We have our show until 5. Then we'll have the Penn State football show presented by Pepsi from Damon's from 6:05 to 7. And yes, James Franklin will be on the show this evening. He missed last week's show because of the practice schedule. There are no classes here this week, thus he bumped the practice up today so he could make the show tonight beginning at 6:05. Thus he will be on the show this evening. And then, of course, Penn State basketball tonight, 8 o'clock will be the tip-off. We'll be on the air at 7:30 as Dick Girardi joins me for that broadcast. So, yes, it is Steve Jones Tuesday. Yeah. Okay. Coming up tomorrow should be fun. George Blaha, the play-by-play voice of Michigan State football, is going to join us tomorrow. He's also the play-by-play voice of the Detroit Pistons. We'll have him on tomorrow as well. So, a couple shows, fun shows back to back. Looking forward to that. Dave Paulson, I believe, is going to be on the show tomorrow as well. So we're looking forward to that. Ben Jones, StateCollege.com. We talked to him briefly on the show yesterday. A couple points we wanted to bring up with Ben as we revisit with him. And one of them is that when you look at what Penn State's done with the sanctions, they're 21-14 since the sanctions were put in play. They're playing at a 60% clip, believe it or not, since the sanctions were put in. So how does that compare to other teams in the conference?
Well, I mean, you're exactly right. I think looking at how Penn State has done compared to the rest of the conference, you really get sort of a perspective on how well things have gone for Penn State. Really, the only teams that have done better in terms of win totals and losing fewer games than Penn State have are, you know, Ohio State, Michigan State, Nebraska, Wisconsin, and Minnesota, who's largely done that through a successful year this year. So for the fact that Penn State's gone 21-14 since 2012 and really has been just below the top level of the conference in terms of how many wins they've picked up over that span, you know, really says a lot about this program's ability to still win games, even though, you know, there's just sort of insurmountable odds at times. And certainly, you know, maybe this isn't the Penn State football that people are used to in terms of tradition and what have you and the kind of product that they're seeing on the field. But I think if you look at this, all of these years is really part of a process moving forward, getting the program back to where it was. I don't know how you can look at the past few years as a whole and really feel like it could have gone any better. Certainly, you know, Franklin and his assistants aren't above criticism and things that they can control within the game, but I think ultimately you look at all of this and go, you know, I don't think it could have gone better.
Yeah, when you look at the full body of work, I'm not sure, Ben, it's just my personal opinion, you can take it wherever you wish here. I'm not sure there's more than maybe 7 or 8 programs nationally that could have been put in this spot and survived it the way this program has.
Yeah, I mean, I think that Penn State was fortunate that it had talent in the right places because I think, you know, I was listening to you guys talk earlier that know, people say, oh, well, you should bench Christian Hackenberg or what have you, but if you can't feel like Penn State's better off with any of the guys that he has than Hackenberg. And really, Hackenberg is one guy that if he doesn't commit to Penn State or if he doesn't come to Penn State, you know, a lot of these wins that they've picked up, you know, maybe they don't have if they have to rely on someone else. And you have a couple guys across the roster that feel out that way, that, you know, that stayed committed and came to Penn State. You know, they're fortunate to have the talent where they have it, even with the depth issues that they have. And I think that's a lot to do with what the kind of program that Penn State is and kind of program Penn State wants to do before this all happened. Because, like you said, now I can't imagine that this happens to Purdue and they end up with the players, you know, and the skill in the right areas enough to come out of the other side more or less a similar program as they were beforehand. So I think definitely you have to be the right kind of program before all of this happens to be able to get through it and come out more or less the same.
So here they are going into this is game 11. Is it when you look at James Franklin and his staff, and by the way, his first season, this is exactly the same record I think they had that he had at the same stage as first season at Vanderbilt. When you look at where the evaluation of a coaching staff should be, should you evaluate the coaching staff after game 11 or in the fourth year?
I think it has to be in the fourth year or some non-specific time in the future. I mean, I think, you know, you and I have both seen guys, you know, like Patrick Chambers on the basketball side, where progress is not always the most evident when it comes to wins and losses, and even in hockey where they're trying to get to these certain objectives, and if they win, that's a good thing. I think to try and evaluate a program and a coaching staff through 11 games when a lot of the obstacles haven't changed and a lot of the problems are really out of their control, I think that's just short-sighted. I think you have to give these guys time to get the kind of players that they want, to be able to work with the players that they have. You have to remember, you know, Bill O'Brien, for as much as everyone liked him and for as football heady as he was, you know, he admitted that he really didn't understand or fully appreciate all of the things that he had on his rosters in terms of skill sets and what these kids are able to do until his second year. But to expect Franklin to come into a situation that was always going to be probably the hardest year of the sanctions, you know, meet all of these kids, figure out how to use them the best, and then go out and win with whatever he had, I mean, I just don't think that's reasonable. Certainly, you know, there's calls here or there that, you know, maybe they'd like to have back, but I don't know that there's a coach in the country that doesn't want to have a call or two back, and certainly, you know, that comes with the territory. But I can't evaluate them outside of, you know, what you see and what you know they can do, you know, at least for another year or two.
Every coach desires his own roster balance. Joe Paterno had his roster balance. Bill O'Brien's roster balance was a little bit different. James Franklin has his own roster balance. Give me the importance of giving him time to establish what that roster balance is.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's definitely important because you're going to get guys and sort of positions filled out in ways that you'd like to. I know that when John Butler was working with the defense, you know, they talk a lot about getting certain types of players in certain types of areas on the defensive side of the ball that they didn't have, and they were trying to work around that. And I think, you know, when you find balance on a roster, you know, it's going to go towards the sorts of things that you want to try and do philosophically as a football team. And it takes time to sort of find those guys and really get them on the team and get them into a position where they're able to make plays for you.
All right, so now moving forward, Michigan State. How anxious are you to see Michigan State and Mark D'Antonio? Because they've done certainly some great things the way they've gone about their business the last couple of years. They really gave the Big Ten at least something to brag about last year by winning the Rose Bowl, beating Stanford. But it's also a team Penn State hasn't played since 2011.
Yeah, I do think it's going to be interesting because, you know, I always felt that Penn State would have had a better chance to win this game had Michigan State lost to Ohio State, and they did. And then Michigan State comes out against Maryland and Rutgers, who certainly aren't the best teams in the Big Ten, but Michigan State did to them what they've done to everyone else that they have faced. So I think, you know, Michigan State looks like a team that is, you know, certainly maybe hunting after something else now, but certainly just as deadly on both sides of the ball, really. And I think the fact that Penn State hasn't, you know, faced Michigan State in a few years makes it a sort of intriguing matchup to see how these programs fare. You know, certainly, you know, I have a hard time picking Penn State to win this one, but at the same time, you know, everyone said that and even more against Ohio State, and that certainly was almost there to be had. So, you know, it's definitely going to be interesting, especially since the last time Penn State saw Michigan State, they were much different kind of program in terms of the success they're having on the field.
I know that I felt that Michigan State was the best team in the conference in April. I said it back in August, and I said that during the season. Then Ohio State walked in and absolutely proved me wrong. Still a pretty good football team, though.
Oh, absolutely, and I felt the exact same way. I thought, you know, Ohio State has really, you know, they've been able to outscore teams, and their defense has done well enough to slow down the rest of the Big Ten, and I've always felt that, you know, if Ohio State faced a good defense, which they have, and Michigan State and Penn State, that if you could score on them, then you had a chance to win, and I think Ohio State made winning plays in times that they had to do that, and that's a sign of a good football team, especially when you play a Michigan State defense that's probably one of the best in the country, but maybe not as good as it was last year.
Ben, thanks so much. Appreciate the time very much.
Happy, thanks for having me,
by the appreciate way, happy it. Thanksgiving to you and yours, okay?
Oh, you too. I appreciate it.
All right. Take That's Ben Jones, StateCollege.com. Appreciate the time he gave us. Interesting perspective, and he wrote this column on StateCollege.com about the very subject we just talked about. We'll transition to the Eagles, then to the Steelers in a few moments. Brandon Gauton, BleedingGreenNation.com, is going to join us in the next half hour. And in the 4 o'clock half hour, starting at 4:06, Jeff Hartman from BehindTheSteelCurtain.com. Then some open line time for us at the end. Tomorrow, I believe we have Dave Paulson on, the head basketball coach at Bucknell, to join us. And also George Blaha tomorrow, the play-by-play voice of the Michigan State Spartans and also the play-by-play voice of the Detroit Pistons, although I will tell you in no uncertain terms, in order to keep the audience engaged, I will not be asking him any questions about the Detroit Pistons, because there's just a gut feeling that if there is a Pistons fan somewhere in the Valley, they don't even admit it themselves. All right. Penn State, of course, coming up tonight, basketball. Don't forget the James Franklin, the Penn State football show at Damon's this evening, 6:05 to 7:00. And, yes, the head coach will be on the show tonight. He did not participate in last week's show because practice ran to 6:45 last week. Because they are on fall term break this week during Thanksgiving, he's been able to adjust the practice schedule. He's bumped it back. And practice will be done at about 6 o'clock this evening. Thus, he'll be able to be on the show this evening to take your questions from 6:05 to 7:00. And then basketball tonight in the Bryce Jordan Center. The Nittany Lions are 4-1 on the season. And we'll take on Akron tonight. Akron, one of only 12 programs over the last 9 years to win 20 games or more each year. Very hard to do, but they've won 20 games or better under Keith Dombrot. 9 consecutive years they've won 20 or better. Not easy. And they will be in the Jordan Center tonight at 8 o'clock. Dick Girardi and I will be on beginning at 7:30 with the Chesapeake Energy tip-off show this evening. So that's what we have coming up here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. And, of course, we also will have Bucknell Penn State basketball for you here on News Radio 1070 coming up on Friday. 4 o'clock will be the tip-off. Airtime set for 3:30 coming up on Friday as well. Most important thing, have a very safe and happy Thanksgiving. We want all of you to enjoy it. We know it's going to snow tomorrow. In fact, you will get more snow in the valley compared to the valley I'm in here. They're talking here about maybe 3 to 5 inches of snow in State College. The amounts appear to be 6 to 10 up and down the valley tomorrow, so please be very, very safe as you travel around the area. Which then brings us to our good friends at Kratzer Insurance, Mount Pleasant Mills, and Northumberland. They sponsor our Tuesday show all the time. Auto, home, life, business insurance. If service and price means something to you, and I know it does, it means everything to them. It's Kratzer Insurance, Mount Pleasant Mills, and Northumberland. I'm in the Sunbury Motors studio, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Our thanks to Ben Jones from StateCollege.com for joining us. Next half hour, Brandon Gauton, BleedingGreenNation.com. Then Jeff Hartman about the Steelers coming up here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
While looking for a vehicle, you know that if it sounds too good to be true, chances are it is too good to be true. You get the runaround, gotta go from place to place. Well, you can just skip all of that and go straight to Sunbury Motor Company. Sunbury Motor Company has been satisfying more customers and selling more cars since 1915, so you know they've got it right. No offers that look good on paper or online, and then you get disappointed when you see them in person. Sunbury Motor Company offers a lineup few other auto dealers in the area can compete with. With the inventory of Ford, Hyundai, Kia, and Lincoln vehicles, there will be no problem finding the right vehicle that fits your needs and your budget. And the friendly, knowledgeable staff's ready and able to help you with everything from the test drive to the drive off the lot. See for yourself at Sunbury Motors. Sunbury Motors Ford, Lincoln, Hyundai in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury. And Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf. Look for them online anytime at sunburymotors.com.
When it comes to insurance, let's face it, the options and the sources keep changing. It gets confusing. Do you really know what you're getting? Better yet, do you know what you're not getting? Save time and save your mind with a simple call to the Kratzer Insurance Agency of Mount Pleasant Mills or Northumberland. For 51 years, the Kratzer Insurance Agency has been keeping the Susquehanna Valley insured and protected from whatever comes our way. If your policy is up for renewal, or you suffer the disappointment of cut-rate insurance deals on the internet or over the phone, then listen. Don't sacrifice personal service. The Kratzer Insurance Agent, your independent agent, has your best interest in mind. Of course they have competitive prices.
Hi, this is Kim Ebright. Call us, stop in, or visit us online at KratzerInsurance.com.
Standing together against whatever. Family, friendship, security. The Kratzer Insurance Agency.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Steve will join us from the Sunbury Motors Studio once again in just a few minutes. Bob Buhner, Kevin Hearn, the Sunbury Motors Studio East right now. Of course, you can find Sunbury Motors on North 4th Street, Sunbury, and the Kia dealership, Routes 11 to 15, Hummel's Wharf. A lot of Black Friday sales going on at both the Lincoln, Hyundai, as well as Ford and Kia dealerships. So check it out, sunburymotors.com, for all the information there. Today's show sponsored by Kratzer Insurance, also available online at kratzerinsurance.com. Life, health, home, auto, business. If price and service matter, and it should, then you need to talk to the folks at Kratzer Insurance in Mount Pleasant Mills and Northumberland. Brandon Gowton joining us from Bleeding Green Nation. I have to ask you first, before we start talking about the Eagles, Brandon, you had a story that you put up early, not long ago, talking about Riley Cooper and Jeremy Maclin. Is there a thing here? Is this just one of those things that if you're having a disappointing season, that kind of comes out and becomes maybe a little bit worse than you originally intended comment-wise?
Right. Yeah, I don't think this is a major beef or anything. I really just think it was a really out of place, kind of weird comment from Riley Cooper. He said he was joking, and I think you can kind of get that sense when you look at the comment. But it was just weird how he, because then he made that joke, and then he went on to kind of explain like why he isn't playing more, because it's a rotation thing. You know, it was just really a weird comment. The better approach for him would have been to say something like, I haven't been playing very well this season, you know, I need to be better, something like that, instead of making a weird joke and making this whole weird situation.
Yeah, it became awkward because he said Macklin's trying to get a contract, so he's probably not going to try and come out of the game. It was just a strange, right. It was just, like you said, a strange joke to make. And, of course, as I said, with his season, Cooper's season, not going as well as he'd hoped, I think it comes out much more, I don't know, snarky or worse.
Right. And it just, he's having a bad season, and really this does nothing to help, you know, people's frustrations with him.
You know, the Eagles coming off of a big win this weekend after, you know, being handled. What was the difference from one week to the next with this Eagles team?
Can you repeat that, please? Sorry, you got cut off there.
No, that's okay. I was going to say, the Eagles having a much better go of it here the last time out. What's the difference between the Eagles team that we saw on Sunday compared to maybe a week ago?
You know, I think... I think. Oh, sorry, what was that one more time? I'm just not getting it.
No, I was just wondering, what are we looking at in the Eagles team here? It seems to be, you know, one week they struggle a little bit, the next week they play really, really well. I was just wondering what's different from one week to the next with this Eagles team this year? In this particular week, I'll put it that way.
They have been inconsistent, and that is a good point. Even in their win against the Titans, they won by a large margin, 43-24, but they just didn't really look like they were firing on all cylinders. There were a couple times in the red zone where the offense stalled, or a couple times late in the game where they kind of needed a first down to keep the clock running, couldn't get it. Instead, they had over 6.1 yards per carry, went over 100, scored a touchdown as well. But there are other times, you know, where it's just, you know, if he wasn't getting that big run, he was just getting nothing at all. It wasn't just like a consistent gain. So they really are up and down. Obviously, the turnovers have been a big issue. Still, they're somehow overcoming those. Mark Sanchez threw two interceptions on Sunday. You know, it's really weird. This is a weird team. You know, I've been thinking that all year. It's a team that people didn't expect it to be. A lot of people expected this team to have a bad pass rush. They're second in the NFL in sack percentage. A lot of people thought this team was going to be a team where the offense, you know, really thrived again, and the defense would kind of just be good enough or it would struggle. And while the defense has had some struggles, it's really been solid for the most part, and it's really the offense that hasn't lived up to its end of the bargain. So it is a really weird team. I'm not sure why it's so inconsistent. I think, to their credit, you know, for all the struggles they have had, I think they've been able to rely on things like improving their special teams unit and improving their defense to make up for some of those deficiencies, and that's why, despite all these struggles, they are 8-3 and first in the NFC East.
Brandon, are teams starting to get used to the Eagles' style of offense, their up-tempo offense, are you seeing maybe teams reacting better to it than they had maybe a couple of year a year or so ago when Chip Kelly brings it into the NFL?
Yeah, I'm not sure if it's so much that as they're just not really executing up front. I think the blocking isn't nearly what it was last year. I think you know there were so many injuries early in the season. You had Evan Mathis out. You had Lane Johnson out for four games. Alan Barbre, who was his backup, went down. A bunch of other changes on the line there, and then you know you get guys like Evan Mathis and Jason Kelce back late in the season at this point, but you know, are they playing at 100% health? You know, I don't really know, because you know they have these injuries and they come back in a short amount of time. They just don't look quite as effective and healthy, and just the continuity factor. You know, the Eagles have had 8 different starting offensive line combinations this year, and I imagine that has to impact things such as communication and just being able to trust the guy next to you and expecting him. Or knowing what he's going to do next and things like that. I really think that's been just a really key point here, that the Eagles just aren't the same offensive line that they were last year. Not to say they're bad. I think the pass protection has been especially solid, but they're just not opening holes for LeSean McCoy like they were last year.
Brandon, how about this team coming into Dallas health-wise? I should say against Dallas health-wise. How are they? I know there's been one or two injuries or one or two reports of maybe a game day decision. What have you heard so far?
Yeah, they're mostly healthy heading into Dallas, which is a good sign for them. Nick Foles obviously ruled out. They said he's going to be reevaluated either this week or next week, and they'll see if how he progresses from there. Really no timetable for him, kind of just a guessing game at this point. But with Foles out, you know, Sanchez is going to start again. He's been up and down, so they really need a good game from him here. Need to eliminate the turnovers that he had in week 12 against the Titans. The other only really significant injury on the roster is Emmanuel Acho, who was splitting time and replacement of D'Amico Ryans at the inside linebacker position. It was about a 50-50 split with him and Casey Matthews with Ryan's out. Now they're going to have to lean more on Matthews, who is not everyone's favorite choice on the inside. Or, you know, it's going to mean more playing time for Marcus Smith, the team's first-round draft pick, who really doesn't have a lot of experience playing at the inside linebacker position. They only moved him there earlier in the season due to injuries from his previous spot of playing on the outside. So really, Acho is going to be the game time decision. It seems like there's a chance he play because he was limited in practice this week. But it does remain to be seen, and it's an important one to watch because the Cowboys like to run the ball, and you know they're going to need Osho there to really shut down DeMarco Murray.
Well, that's what I was just going to say. This is a big matchup with Dallas. I think that, what do they play him a couple of times here in the next what, 3-4 weeks even?
Right. Yeah, they play him this Thursday and then again on December 14th.
Now, is this a bad situation to meet the? I mean, I don't want to say it's a must-win. This is a very important game for Philadelphia and or Dallas, and it's on a short week for both teams. Is this a bad setup as far as if you're an Eagles fan or a Dallas fan or even a member of the team for that matter, or would you rather see this matchup where you had a full week to prepare, or doesn't it really matter in the NFL?
I'm really not a fan of the Thursday format in general. I just think it tends to lead to sloppier games. Maybe you know, you look at a game last week where the Chiefs lose to the Raiders on the road on Thursday night. You know, maybe if that game's on a Sunday, and the Raiders continue to look bad and the Chiefs win easy or something like that. But yeah, anything can really happen with these Thursday games. I think players are playing on such short rest, and it's kind of crazy. I think it's a little crazier for the Cowboys considering they had a Sunday night football game and they didn't really get back to Dallas, I think, until like 5 a.m. on Monday.
Yeah, good point.
You know, it was a really, what was that?
No, I said that's a very good point.
Yeah, it was really quick turnaround for them. I mean, but then again, you know, they're not the ones who have to travel this week. That's the Eagles, so they're going to have to get on the plane tomorrow, I imagine, to be ready in time for the Thursday game. And the thing with the Thursday game on Thanksgiving is, you know, the regular Thursday night games are night at night, you know, around 8:30. This, you know, this one's going to be at 4, so it's you're even losing those extra 4 hours that, you know, you would usually get. So I don't think it's really a huge advantage either way, but I do think just the short rest factor can have an impact on both teams. Maybe the Eagles do have an edge if their vaunted training and conditioning program is really as good as people say it is.
Brandon, we all know that the Phillies fan base is always a critical group of people, and they have a keen eye. What is the reaction to Chip Kelly this season by the fan base as compared to last year?
Yeah, I think there was a lot of skepticism last year. I think there's a lot of optimism, but a lot of people were curious to see how this guy who was so successful in the college ranks would stack up in the professional league. And really, you know, he came out, passed the test with flying colors, became only the second ever NFL coach since the merger to win the division in their first year as on an NFL staff. Other guy was Barry Switzer back with the Cowboys, and he was taking over a team that had won just 2 Super Bowls. So, you know, obviously much easier task for him compared to Chip Kelly taking over a 4-12 Eagles team in 2012. But I think Kelly, you know, has continued to earn faith from the organization and really proved himself again. So far this year, the team is 8-3. You know, a lot of people had questions about this defense. The defense has played well. The offense has struggled, like I said, but there's still some potential there. Quarterback play hasn't been up to snuff, so there are some issues. But you look at things, you know, like the team cut DeSean Jackson, and the offense is still, for the most part, in the terms of the receivers are fine. Riley Cooper has struggled, but you know, that's not really what's hurting them. It's more so the run game. So I think you have to look at what he's done here, and you have to give him a passing grade. I think, you know, we run these approval polls on Bleeding Green Nation every month, and he's always at least above 90%.
Brandon, if you have to come up with one particular aspect of the game, I think this is a really interesting matchup between the Eagles and the Cowboys, just because of the offense-defense matchup alone between the Eagles offense and the Dallas defense. But what do you see as being the one key matchup in this game on Thanksgiving?
The one matchup that I'm really looking at here is that Philadelphia front seven. They have a young defensive line. They have Connor Barwin, who has 12.5 sacks this season. Very versatile. You have Trent Cole, who's a veteran, but he can still get to the quarterback. He's also forced at least 3 or 4 fumbles here this season, so not only can he get to the quarterback, but he can also rip the ball out very effectively. So you look at these guys, and they're a very strong reason why the defense has been successful, because the secondary has struggled. But if the front seven plays up to snuff, they can kind of eliminate some of those errors, put pressure on the quarterback, not give them the time to really pick apart the secondary. And then, you know, that's a unit that's going up against the Dallas Cowboys offensive line, which has been very good this season. DeMarco Murray is obviously the leading the NFL's leading rusher for a reason. He's getting the kind of blocking where, you know, he doesn't even need to make people miss as much as he's just getting the space to run through, big holes to run through. And then while the run blocking has been great, I think the offensive, or the pass protection rather, hasn't been as good. They do allow sacks, they do allow hits. I think the Eagles, you know, might have an advantage in that respect. I think, you know, for as much as the Cowboys offensive line has been hyped, I think they're a little vulnerable against sacks and hits, as we saw the other week when Tony Romo was knocked out of the game against the Redskins. You know, the Washington really just went to town on him, and I think that's going to be the strategy here, is really just try to get to Romo, get him early, you know, make him throw, and really get him under pressure.
Hey, Brandon, thanks so much for your time. We appreciate it very much. Great to have your insight before this big Thanksgiving Day matchup.
Hey, always glad to be here.
Brandon Gowden from BleedingGreenNation.com with us every Tuesday to talk a little Eagles football. I tell you what, this is going to be an interesting matchup. Maybe the best matchup on Thanksgiving Day. That's debatable, but
I agree with you. I think it is. There's a lot at stake, and you know, this short week affects both teams. It's not like one team had a lot of rest and the other team just has a couple days to get ready. They both are basically within the same schedule.
Can you imagine pulling in it? I mean, let's say that fortunately, whoever made up the schedule thought about this. But can you imagine being put on Sunday Night Football, coming back on Monday morning at 5 a.m. on a short week, and then having to fly out to face somebody? At least they have a home game to come back to afterwards. Yeah. I didn't even think about that until he mentioned it.
You wonder, is that really going to be, because of the short time, a real distinct advantage for the home team in this matchup?
Well, it is Thanksgiving Day, and as long as you call the coin toss right, you're good to go.
There you are.
That's my Thanksgiving Day football suggestion to every team. Just make sure you clearly call the toss.
There you go.
We'll have more on the Steve Jones Show coming up. We will talk about the situation at Selins Grove. Dave Hess, the head coach of the Selins Grove Seals, announcing his retirement. We'll have stepping down, I should say, not necessarily retirement, but stepping down as the head coach of the Seals. We'll talk more about that when we return. This is the Steve Jones Show, sponsored by Kratzer Insurance Sunbury, from the Sunbury Motors Studio East on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Welcome back to the Steve Jones Show. Moments ago, talked to Brandon Gowden of BleedingGreenNation.com about the Philadelphia Eagles. We'll have that for you on the SteveJonesShow.com in just a few moments. Actually, in about an hour or so. And I'm not quite that fast in editing and posting.
Kevin, big news on the local high school sports scene today with an announcement out of Selins Grove.
Yeah, there was an announcement at Selins Grove. Our Eagle 107 Seals play-by-play announcer, Pat O'Brien, received a letter from Dave Hess and asked that he share the information that Dave Hess is stepping down as the head football coach at Selins Grove. In the statement, he says that it is a decision that his family and himself as well have given a lot of thought over a long period of time, and his reasons for stepping away from the district and the football program are purely positive. He feels it's time for somebody else to bring a new energy to the already thriving program. I'm reading from the statement here. I should mention that. The Seals have an excellent talent coming back, and I don't want to stand in their way. I think this is a proper time to step down so that the next coach has a great nucleus for the future, and that will give the Seals every opportunity to continue their high level of success on and off the field. You can see more about this on Facebook, on WKOK, as well as on WKOK.com. There is more of that statement that goes on. Of course, Dave was a Selins Grove grad. Or is still a Selins Grove grad. He was a two-way lineman, captain of his senior year at Lock Haven. He was a four-year starter at defensive tackle, was on Lock Haven's last PSAC championship team, recently retired as a teacher from the Selins Grove area high school as well. That is the second coach in the area to step down from their high school football position. Mount Carmel's Carmen DeFrancesco about a week or so ago also stepped down as the school board opened that position up for bid. And what a lot of people don't realize, Bob, is these coaching positions in high school are not a contract position. They are a one-year deal, and at 1 year, they renew. The school board renews the contract or opens it up where the current coach or coaching staff, I should say, can reapply, or they also look at new potential new coaches as well. In both cases, both coaches, Coach Carmen DeFrancesco and Coach Dave Hess, have stepped down to and they will open up the position then.
Yeah, one of the things, Kevin, that I want to comment on about Dave Hess is besides being a really successful coach with a great record, I think he showed incredible character a couple years ago when there was an incident with students, athletes in Selins Grove who apparently went to a party where some things were served that are illegal for anyone under the age of 21. And he didn't sweep it under the rug. He didn't make excuses. Those athletes that participated in that were no longer on the team. And the result was a very, from the one loss perspective, not the best season Selins Grove ever had. However, it was one of the best seasons Selins Grove ever had from the perspective of teaching life's lessons. And I give kudos to Dave Hess for setting an example on something like that. And he knew that he was going to take a hit on the win-loss record, but that was not important to him. Too many coaches may feel the other way. And the other part about guys like Dave Hess and Carmi DeFrancesco is the amount of time that they are away from family, the amount of time they commit to a season is far in excess of any compensation. And sometimes you just get tired of the grind that high school football can be. It's great that Dave Hess is going out successful.
Well, one way or another, Steve Jones will join us. We understand that in the State College area, there is a power outage, a fairly major one. So
so the backup generator at his house isn't working.
Right. So we'll check in with Steve one way or another, even if it's by carrier pigeon, coming up in the next hour.
All right.